Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, today we're talking hammer toes, and one of the things that Jen and I always talk about and share about when it comes to foot recovery and starting on your foot mobility journey is how do we find some space for those toes. So one of the things that you will see us using is a toe spacer, and specifically we use one from Neboso. And the reason that we love this is because it fits so comfortably, it has a very low profile, and it's not so aggressive. It gives you the space you need, but it doesn't put your feet in pain. And you can also wear this thing when you're wearing shoes or socks. So you can wear it throughout the day, especially as you start gauging into more use of this thing. Neboso also has some amazing products, their recovery socks and their NeuroBall, because we talk all the time about how many nerves are in our feet, and we really don't give those nerves the stimulation they should be getting throughout the day. So these recovery socks, this NeuroBall are two things that can really, really help you start to open up the feet, feel more with those feet, and that's ultimately going to affect your movement and your overall health. We have an amazing code, 20% off using code OPTIMAL on all Neboso products. They actually just launched a brand new toe spreader on April 1st. So go get the updated model, use code OPTIMAL at checkout. And now let's head into the podcast.
So we get a lot of people who come to us with foot issues and continual like buildup of these stress fractures, this overload that's happening at the foot. And particularly, we get a lot of complaints on the outside of the foot, which is that fifth metatarsal head. So that's why we wanted to do a podcast on it.
Yeah, I should have looked this up. I think there's a special name for that. Somebody who started trying to name it after themselves initially. I don't know if it's Frank's fracture or something. But it happens a lot on the outside of this foot, and like you said, it's overuse. Mm-hmm. And so when we think overuse, we're thinking about like, what might we have changed? What might we be doing differently? And I always feel bad because there's a lot of people who say like, oh, I just got back into exercise and moving. It's been going so great. And now I'm feeling this pain in my foot. You know, what do I do?
And stress fractures are hard because they take time.
Yeah.
And that's the most frustrating part for people. So we're going to really break down exactly what those time constraints kind of look like. And we're going to go into some tools that you can actually use, not only exercises, but some tools that we found beneficial that can really help to take that pressure off while you're in that healing phase.
Yeah. And it's tough because we're talking about bone. Like this is bone, and they heals a lot different than other tissue. And so, like you said, it takes time. Well, yeah, it takes time to heal bone and remodel bone. So when we get into like, oh, how long, you might want to change your activity levels a little bit. It might seem like a long time, but that's really what we need to do when we're starting to see an injury like this. And I've never had a diagnosed stress fracture, specifically this fifth metatarsal one, but I do feel pain here, especially because I have the type of feet that absorb a lot of the stress when I do impact activities. I have really high arches, more of the rigid type foot. So every time my foot hits the ground, it's taking a lot of that impact. And if I do something like pick up basketball, like, and I start getting into basketball consistently or go on jogs, I've been trail running with Kai a lot lately, like I will feel different things in my feet because of that consistent stress that I've started to put on the foot. And so the fifth, the metatarsal, it tends to be one that likes to take on a lot of that stress for some reason.
Yeah, and I think that's due to the load and the management of how we move within our foot, right? I mean, mm-hmm. our foot is naturally, and this is something that I think a lot of people don't think about, it's naturally going to kind of move into pronation and supination as we walk, and particularly as we run, and especially with you, mm-hmm. you're wearing more barefoot type shoes. And if you look at the structure of a high arch, so you can just Google it, you know, but on YouTube we'll have a picture that flies up. But when you look at the photo of a high arch, you see that these bones almost look so compressed already. So like you said, they're already taking on a lot of that load and stress. And then you go on, you barefoot run essentially through these hills and all these things, and you're putting a lot of pressure. And what we see a lot with these stress fractures, especially happening at that fifth metatarsal, is when the foot gets this plantar fascia kind of gets this pull that's happening, right? When we go into what we call plantar flexion, which is just pointing your toes. So think of your toes, your feet going away from your shin, right? So when we point the feet and then we adduct. So we're putting the foot down and in. But that is going to naturally happen kind of when we go into supination. So we first plant and our foot kind of pronates and then it supinates. But now if we're getting that extreme kind of pulling and that overload happening over and over again, especially in someone with a high arch, you can only imagine how much pull and force is kind of accumulating over time. And that's what stress fractures are. It's that accumulation that happens over time that kind of causes that weakening of the bone tissue.
Yeah. And this is something that kind of like we've mentioned, it's a lot more common in people doing impact type activities like running and dancing and lots of jumping, but also tends to be a little more prevalent in kids, especially amongst stress fractures in the feet. Like it's seen at slightly higher percentage in kids, which when I think about it, I wouldn't be exactly sure why. Maybe it's because like kids don't tend to like fully fracture a bone because their bones are a little more pliable and malleable. And so just that consistent stress and kids are running around a lot. Maybe that might be a reason that you'll see it there a little more often.
It's interesting. I go back to thinking about the podcast that we did with Kaylee. So she is a pediatric physical therapist. So if you have kids, you should listen to that podcast. Can't remember exactly what number
Movement
that
Mama?
Was. Yeah, the Movement Mama. She's awesome. She talked about like the babies that go in the bouncers a lot too. And just the compression that you're putting, not only she talks a lot about the hip joint, right? And we're putting our babies and having them load when they're not even ready to walk yet and really loading those hips. But imagine what you're doing at your feet too. Like I can only imagine we're talking about the hips all the way up the chain, but your feet are the first thing that are hitting and you're not used to like, and you're not running, you're not jumping yet, you're not using that compression, but yet you're putting your feet in that constant kind of compression. So that could, I'm not saying that this is researched, okay?
No, we're just kind of talking through it, which I like, but from the time you're a baby to the through adolescence, your bones are much more able to model and mold based on the activities you're doing. Which again, that kind of makes sense to me. Like, okay, your feet might be trying to rapidly mold, adapt to all of this running activity you're doing, and then suddenly you're going a little bit over your foot's capability, and then you start
to
develop,
which is what it is.
Yeah, and then you start to develop this stress injury in that fifth metatarsal bone area. And again, the metatarsal, like if you're looking at your pinky finger, the bone that's in your hand, right below your pinky finger, we also have that's called our metacarpal. Right? Right? I almost blanked for a second there. That's called our metacarpal. Carpal meaning hand or wrist. And then metatarsal meaning foot, you know, foot or ankle area. It's just that bone right below your pinky toe that's within your foot. And you start to develop that stress injury there.
And another thing that, you know, kind of came up within the research that I think is really fascinating, something that is just another point to continue to think about is your nutrition and your intake in that. If you're low in vitamin D, obviously that's going to have an effect on your bones and your bone tissue and your bone health. So yes, we're looking at those who have osteoporosis or arthritis, and then they go into something like Zumba. And that's a lot of compression on your feet. And a lot of women that, you know, who are a little bit older, a lot of times like to do that. It's fun. You're dancing, you're working out. Yeah. However, if you haven't been doing a lot of that compression on your feet and you already know you're prone to osteoporosis.
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing nutrition wise to kind of help to support your body? And I think that's so important. So I don't like to say like stop the activity, which we will get to what that modification kind of means. However, what can you do outside of that as well? Can you start supplementing with vitamin D? Can you go outside a little bit more throughout the day? Also, we need to look at calorie intake. So if you're not giving your body enough calories, if you're not fueling your body with the nutrients that needs to support this bone tissue, whenever we start to do practices or exercises to try to help, or we're resting and recovering, rest and recovery goes with nutrition as well. And so sleep, nutrition, vitamin levels, these all play a role into helping stress fractures as well.
Especially, I mean, you brought up the Zumba example, especially if that's somebody who's like, New Year's resolution, I'm going to go do Zumba with my friends, you know, X amount of times per week, or you get it as a gift, like, oh, here, let's take these Zumba classes, and you start really getting into it. Again, that sudden change, like, again, the activity itself might be great, might be perfect, but maybe we start with one time a week instead of three times a week, and then you know, we won't progress into this space that our feet aren't used to, because what have we been doing prior? And all of a sudden we're in this dance class where we're taking 5,000 steps in an hour, you know, of this dance class. That's a lot for our body to suddenly adapt to. And it's going to need all the nutrients and rest and recovery, which we're going to get into, you know, like some of the stretches and things that you could do prior to going into a class like that.
Yeah. And that kind of takes us into like these risk factors that were kind of noted in some of the research. Like, yes, we can look at running technique and we want to look at the shoes that you're wearing and are you supporting your body? However, it all comes back to kind of what Dom was highlighting is how prepared and ready is your body for the activity that you're taking on? Is it a sudden change? Is it something that you gradually progressed back into? And I know that's hard a lot of the times because it's like, if you're feeling great and you have all this energy and you've been changing things, maybe you've been losing weight. So you're like, I'm going to run. And you all of a sudden go a little bit too hard. Like you didn't start at a mile. You started at five. And then you didn't start it just like a couple days a week. You started every day. You know, when we start to jump back into these activities, we like to blame all the other factors outside. We like to blame our shoes. We like to blame our feet. We like to blame all these things. But at the same time, sometimes we just need to look at, well, how am I progressing within my body? And am I giving my body the time to adapt?
Or you blame the activity itself. And then that's when we start to make up these things in our head, like, oh, I can't run anymore.
Yeah.
It hurts my feet too much. I can't go to Zumba classes anymore. My feet and ankles can't handle it. When in reality, like it's not the activity itself. It's just that we tried to run 10 miles before we walked around the block, you know, and we have to slowly progress ourselves into some of these things so that our body can mold and adapt to it. And I think that's the really important thing here is, how do we make sure that our body's prepared to go into these activities? So why don't we talk a little bit about, okay, I've got this pain now. I have this pain on the outside of my foot. What do I do?
Right. So that is the first thing, is we do want a little bit of an activity modification in the beginning. And it's hard, especially like I know I've had friends who, you know, have had stress fractures and they're like, but I walk on my feet. You know, I have to use my feet. And, you know, and that's when in the very beginning, it might be, this is where you want to talk with your doctor as well and make sure like what is really happening and what is best treatment protocol at first. It could be beneficial to get like just like a foot boot, something that helps to prevent so much movement side to side where you're still going to be able to move your ankle and it's not like a full leg boot. And that's what they were kind of finding in research as well, is that, you know, people kind of preferred more of this foot brace rather than the whole short leg that covers the ankle, because then you're really limited in what you can do. But if you at least have like the foot one, it's kind of preventing motion side to side in the foot, but you're still like using it, walking on it, but it really is also going to not allow you to run, not allow you to walk so fast. Kind of you're forced to modify your activity for at least like a week.
And it all depends, of course, on how severe the injury is, where a lot of the time stress fractures or these types of stress injuries don't even show up on x-rays for a while, right? Or until they get fairly advanced. A lot of the times a doctor, an orthopedist, somebody, they might just be diagnosing it based on your symptoms. Saying like, oh, you have pain out here. Oh, you've just started running a lot. This is probably the beginning of a stress injury. That's when we want to catch it. And that's when we want to do the activity modification, because then you might just be able to modify and start running a little less, do a little bit of stretching beforehand. It's great to, you know, get some calf stretches in, make sure that you're treating your feet well after you do these activities, and maybe cut what you're doing in half or even in a quarter and see if that changes the symptoms you're feeling. Because you might be catching it before it starts to show up on an x-ray and become an actual fracture in your bone. And then, you know, they say that if it starts to displace, which means that the bone surfaces are actually a little bit apart from each other based on where they normally are at. And if it displaces more than 2 millimeters, that's when we might start getting into, okay, there might be surgical procedures that are even better for getting this thing reduced, which means getting the bones back together and then letting it heal.
Yeah. But, you know, that's not always the case. So we always, and as soon as we start to feel something, early modifications and early support is always best. Yes. So don't wait and just say like, you know, oh, well, it's going to go away on its own. Let me just keep running. Yeah. Like, how can we modify the activity? And at first, that could even mean, okay, maybe you are buying new shoes. Maybe you are buying something that's a little bit more supportive and you're cutting your mileage a little bit, you know? And I know that's so hard for those who are avid runners and people who love to do the activity that they're doing, but providing support early on and making sure that you're not tapping into the pain. And that's where we see if we do early weight bearing, early activities within our pain tolerance and making sure that we're not bumping into pain, we see a lot more improvement in how that bone starts to heal and actually getting that reduction in that movement, you know, again, earlier. So that's before it starts to really displace, before it really becomes an issue that we need surgery. So if we're really listening to our body, taking that in and saying, okay, how can I start treating my feet, which is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, you can implement these things before you even start to get the stress fractures as well.
And that's where the difficulty is, where when we do go too far and then people start getting told from PTs or, you know, their doctors, okay, you should just stop this activity, right? And that can be really tough if you're a runner, if you're somebody who loves the activity that you're doing, the Zumba, basketball, dancing, whatever it is, that can be really tough to just be told, stop for 4 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people will then get into this cycle of, okay, I waited 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling so much better. Let me go back and try doing this thing again, you know, because nobody, myself included, likes to listen to doctors, nor do we think they know what the heck they're talking about. And so we'll be like, hey, I'm feeling great. I don't need to wait 8 weeks. Like, yeah, my body healed faster. And then you go back and do the thing where, again, your pain may have gone away because the inflammation in the foot may have worked its way out. Your bone might be in a healing process. You're not aggravating it with that stimuli of running like you were previously, where you go back and do one or two runs even, and then you just find yourself slipping back down that slide or that slippery slope again and being like, ooh, same pain came back. Then we kind of reset the counter.
I know. And wouldn't it be so great to not have to do that, so you actually wait the proper amount of time? Which, yes, 4 to 8 weeks of activity modification, it's quite a bit.
It's a lot.
But we can get creative as well. So what else can we do? So maybe I'm not running right now, but I'm doing the bike, or I'm doing rowing, or I'm doing something that takes some pressure off of my foot directly and I'm not putting all the weight on it, right?
If you love running, get in a pool and run laps in a pool. Like, I love pool running because actual running can hurt my feet sometimes. So
yeah. And it completely is non-weight bearing at that point then, right?
Yeah.
So what can we do and how can we creatively get into a space where, okay, for these 4 weeks at least, I'm going to create this modification because I know in the long run,
yeah,
it's going to help my body.
And that 4 to 8 weeks mark, that isn't just a made up number. When we look at bone healing, even if you have a full fracture in your arm, they cast it and it's 6 to 8 weeks, right? And it really is. Our bone takes that amount in normal healing. If you have like normal nutrition and you don't have any blood flow issues, like, your bone should heal in 6 to 8 weeks. And that is when our bone is ready to start being loaded again, so that it can then say, like, okay, now let me build up to get ready for this activity. So after that 6 to 8 weeks, that's when you can return to that activity. But again, instead of 3 times a week, maybe we do 1 a week and see how we feel. Or maybe we cut it down to half or a quarter of the distance or the intensity that we were doing, and then see how we feel.
And bone healing can be it comes back even stronger. So allow your body the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that it can heal and it can get stronger.
Absolutely.
And you can go back to the activities. Now let's talk about some of while you're in this healing phase and you're already super frustrated, what are some of the things that we can do? We have a tool that people can use.
Absolutely, because our tissues, our bones, especially our feet, they love space, which is why we love to use toe spacers. And so we have these little guys, these little jelly.
Oh my God, you have to do the nose with it.
Yeah. I'm waving it around for anyone who's just listening. We have these little things, which I love.
These are the Neboso Toe Splay. And what's great about these, so I would always say just use socks because it's easy, it's convenient, and you still can.
Socks work great. I mean, I still use socks if I'm too lazy to go up to my room and get this thing.
Right, exactly. It's a good start, at least. The thing about socks that sometimes gets a little... weird is that sometimes the toes end up going in different directions because your socks are interweaving between the toes in different directions. So that's where it can get a little weird. And also we used just like the traditional, what everyone knows is like, what was it? The yoga toes or something like that. They're aggressive.
They're thick.
They're thick. They're aggressive. And you don't, especially when your foot is healing, you don't need something so aggressive. And the thing that we love about these Neboso is that look at how like it just, it moves. There's not as much tension, I should say, within the space between them. So it doesn't feel like it's cutting off circulation within your toes. And it doesn't feel so aggressive. So you can wear it for about 10 to 15 minutes a night without it doing too much. Now, someone had reached out to me and said that they were trying to sleep in their Neboso and they were told not to. And I would agree with that. We don't need to be wearing these for more than 15 minutes a night. It's not necessary. This is just to create some passive stretch. So imagine, would you be sitting in a stretch for 15 minutes even? Probably not, right? So this is a very gentle way to create that passive space within the foot.
Yeah. And the thing I love about these two is they're also very thin profile. So if you're like, oh, but I need to be up on my feet and walking around, they are something that you can slip on your feet and then put your socks and shoes back on and walk around. Or if you're at work, you can toss them on quick and then walk around and then slip them off 10 or 15 minutes later. But again, it does just give your feet and toes that little bit of extra space that you're not used to. And then when you take them off, you will notice and be like, whoa, like I feel like I have a little extra wiggle room to play with here. Mm-hmm. And so the Neboso ones we've been huge fans of. You get actually 20% off if you use code OPTIMAL. So go check those out. But then what should we do once we have that space or once we have used the Neboso toe spacers?
That's where we need to teach the body how to create that space on its own. Yeah. So after any time we do a passive stretch, we should always say, okay, how can I activate within that range now that I now my brain has been opened up to? My brain has felt like, okay, I can relax into this new open position. And so once we take the toe spacers off, that's when you want to start to open the toes naturally on your own. And you might, in the very beginning, it might be really difficult, but what we've seen from a lot of people that have started to use toe spacers, all of a sudden they take it off and they're like, oh, my pinky moves.
Yeah, I saw my pinky wiggle. I saw my pinky twitch. I thought about it and it happened. And it's funny because a lot of people haven't thought about actively moving their pinky toe. In how long? Ever, maybe. I mean, we do it naturally when we're kids, but once we hit life and we start rolling, like how often do we think about looking down and trying to wiggle our pinky toes back and forth? Not often. And so the first time you do that in a decade or more, it might be pretty tough. You might not have a lot of active, you know, or volitional conscious nerve systems going down to those toes like, okay, how do I do this? But the more that we do that, if you're putting these toe spacers on or toe splays on, I think these ones are called, every night, and then you take them off and try to do 10 active toe spreads, that might be all it takes. Yes. In a couple months, you're really going to start noticing more of a connection with how those toes are feeling and moving.
And the reason we like and we talk about toe spacing so much and getting those toes to open and relax is because we have what are called intrinsic foot muscles, which connect all the way into the toes on either side. And that's what's helping to open and close the toes.
And they come from the metatarsals.
Yes. So they come from deep into that foot. And the reality is a lot of times our toes are just squished together all day long, all the time, in socks, in shoes. Like they're constantly just held together. And so we're not using those muscles on the inside of the foot anymore that connect down into what are called those metatarsals that support the midfoot to create the strength and the power needed so that we're not getting extra pulling in other places. So if we want a functional, good moving foot, we need first the access to those muscles. And so getting just into that passive ability to open those toes and then use those toes is going to help to provide more support and strength awareness into that foot.
Totally. So that's the toes. Also, I mean, we're talking about the foot more so here at the outside of the foot. And we talked about pronation and supination or the flattening and creating that arch in the foot. So we can always do things like sitting down, especially since it might not be super comfortable to do it in a loaded position right away, but even sitting down and trying to push down and flatten that foot, and then pull that arch up and create an arch in your foot. Again, might be something that's tough right away. For me, the flattening part is tough. I really have to think about breathing and letting my foot relax down into the ground and then creating that arch. And you're going to notice how you feel this deep ache inside your foot after you do 10 or 15 reps of that.
Yeah. And you're almost thinking of like when you're in that sitting on the ground, watching your foot kind of flatten, you're almost thinking of this bone at the top of the foot kind of coming down and in. And that's going to cause that a little bit more flattening of the foot, the stretch in the inside of that plantar fascia. And then we want to think of that bone rotating out without lifting the ball of the big foot or those toes. So without crunching or lifting the foot, like, can we move this top of the foot in and out to create that midfoot down, like lengthening and stretching and contracting without the heel and the ball of the foot moving? And we're, of course, we'll show this on YouTube for those listening and are saying, what
the heck are we doing here?
You know, but just starting to get that midfoot control is so important, because then once we are able, we start to do our single leg balancing. Yeah. And we're starting to say, okay, how does my foot control in single leg balancing? So kicking off your shoes completely, no socks, no shoes, just barefoot on the ground, allowing that foot to start to gain more awareness, proprioception, and feeling into the ground as we hold in that single leg. And that's where we like to do some of those reaches forward, side, back, in, out, you know, all these different reaches on a single leg. Again, once you're able to tolerate this with no pain.
Totally. And balance is huge, because most of these activities we're talking about have to do with running in some sort, or even dancing. You're doing a lot on single legs, especially when you're doing fancy moves. I've done some of those Zumba classes. They are hard, and you do some pretty tough things. And if we don't have control on one foot, or if you notice you stand on one foot and your foot and ankle are just going wild and it makes you feel like you need to fall over, that could be something that we need to work on. And that tells us that our foot muscles might not have the most amount of control when we are running and basically launching our body from foot to foot, you know? So how can we gain a little more control doing single leg balance stuff, starting to reach and tap with our opposite foot, like Jen was saying? And then once we get to that point, we talked earlier about plantar flexion and how a lot of this might happen because our plantar fascia is pulling at that fifth toe or that fifth metatarsal when we're in that plantar flexion and adduction, which happens when we launch off of our foot when we're running. We need to train that. So why don't we train heel raises? And there's so many different variations of heel raises we can do. You can just start on the ground and going up on your toes, trying to make sure that you don't let your ankles fall to the outside, keeping your ankles right in line with your big toe, and going up and down, nice and controlled. The biggest thing is controlling on the way down. That's the eccentric or lengthening phase.
Mm-hmm. And you can even get like a medium-sized ball to hold between the ankles.
Yeah, that's great.
And do the heel raises that way, because that's going to help to retrain that pattern so that we're not falling to the outside of that foot and putting too much pressure into the pinky toe or that fifth metatarsal, right? And so getting that control back in the foot, getting that stability back in the midfoot, getting those toes to start to activate, you start to implement all these three areas as tolerable. Again, we're not pushing into pain. We're making sure that we're not in pain. But if you're starting to rebuild as you're in this waiting phase of getting back to your activity, you're going to get back to your activity so much stronger with a different reaction within the foot, so you don't continue to go down the line of continual stress fractures.
Absolutely. And last thing with heel raises is starting to vary up your foot position. So pointing toes in towards each other and then toes out, and seeing how that feels, and then elevating your toes so that you can do it from a depth, so your heels can go down below your toes and then all the way up. And that's going to start helping lengthen through that plantar fascia and then the back of the leg up through the calves even more, to give your foot, your ankle, everything a little more space and the control within that space. Thanks for tuning in for another PT Pearl on one of our favorite topics, the toes and the feet. Remember, we do have a 2-week foot and ankle plan in the Gen Health platform. You can do phase one and then move into phase two, and that's just going to continue to help you access more space at the feet and connect those feet to the ground. So go and check that out. You get a free week trial, and we also have a monthly option out now as well. Again, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it out with a couple people. We're almost 200 podcasts in. We are so excited to have episode 200 coming out next week, and we're going to have some special surprises for you. So make sure you tune in for that one, and we will see you on future episodes of the Optimal Body Podcast.